You're listening to the Family Podcast from PursueGod.org.
Well, hey, couples, today I'm so excited. I have my husband, Brian, with me today. We're going to talk about a new series that we just put up on the in the family category of Pursue God called The Sandwich Generation. Now, you might be thinking, sandwiches? Yum. But no, what we're talking about is this idea that many couples find themselves in where you're currently actively parenting your own kids, but then you're also increasingly taking care more and more of your aging parents. So it's called the sandwich generation. So some of you might still be active parenting. Some of you might be empty nests, but this idea of that you have your own kiddos, but then you're also finding that you need to give more care to your parents who are getting older and maybe are losing some of their independence or their health is declining, whatever. So we thought it might be fun because we personally have some experience with this in our own lives with our own parents. And we thought it would be helpful to walk through this series and you could use this podcast to kind of help you understand how to use this series and the topics that are in it. Because I think it's really practical information. I wrote a book called The Sandwich Generation Survival Guide. And that gave me a lot of great ideas. And we've been implementing some of the ideas she put in this book to create not only this series, but to actually start having some conversations with my own parents. So we just wanted to share that with you today. And maybe you can glean some information here, or maybe you can just resonate with some of the, just the frustrations, the hardships, the confusion of dealing with the sandwich generation kind of issues. So Brian, I'm glad you're here because we both have situations with our parents in just different ways.
Yeah, it's kind of surreal because our kids are in their 20s, our parents are approaching 80, and we're doing this thing where we're trying to honor our parents and we're trying to model that for our kids, and we hope our kids would do the same thing for us when we need it, you know. Yes. So this is a series that we're going to use with our parents, but we're also going to hope that 30, 40 years from now, our kids pull this up at pursuegod.org if the internet is still a thing, and they'll use this series to help us out.
Yeah. So why don't you just share briefly what your parents' situation is and just some of the things you've been facing before we get into the topics themselves?
Well, yeah. So my mom has got dementia. It's fairly stabilized, but it's pretty noticeable. Her short-term memory is pretty terrible. My dad is doing a great job being a caretaker for her. You know, it's been neat to see his love for her and his, you know, trying to be true to his vows. He said stuff like that to us quite a bit. Like, this is what our vows were all about. You know, I'm not going to put her in a home. I'm going to see this through. I'm going to protect her. But the reality is, and I think he's realizing this, she might outlast him. I mean, you know, who knows? You know, he's already, I think, made it 10 years past anyone in his family, his parents or grandparents. So he doesn't know what the future holds for him. And so we've all started talking about the kids. They had five kids. So all five kids now, we're starting to, you know, have conversations with him about it. And it's kind of hard to know where to start, how to have the conversation. They're not always not every parent is super receptive. I mean, my dad is super receptive to the conversation. It's not really something that my mom's involved in. It's really more of a conversation that the kids are going to have, starting with my dad. And so it's just kind of an awkward, it's a hard conversation, which is lesson two in the series. How do I approach these hard conversations? So we'll get into some of those tips. But Tracy, you and your sister just tried to have the first conversation with your parents and it didn't go as well as you had hoped.
Yeah, I learned some things as I kept reading and realized some mistakes we made. I'll come to that in a minute. I mean, I think that just for continued setup in our situation, that you have four other siblings, three that live locally by your parents, and then you and your sister live away. So some uniqueness to your ability to really be a part of the day-to-day stuff because we don't live there. And then conversely, for me, I have just one sister. So there's just two of us that are managing and kind of making plans and thinking this through. And my parents are local to me and my sister lives away. And so we're just trying to figure out how do we do this moving forward? Because for me, this summer, my dad had a health scare and was in the hospital for a couple of days. And, you know, for me, number one, I realized I don't even know the medications my dad is on. If my mom were to go first, I had to go to the hospital with my dad, I wouldn't even know what to tell the doctors. I don't even know all the surgeries that he's had. So it kind of prompted me to be like, you know what, we need to start having a plan for how we're going to deal with things moving forward and anticipating if my mom, who's more the detail person, were to pass first, how would we take care of my dad? How do we take care of them both now as their health is, you know, they're still in pretty darn good health, but there's some limitations with eyesight and driving and different things. So we'll talk about that here more in a minute, just about some of those harder conversations my sister and I just tried to have that did go so well. So I don't know what other people in their situations are, but maybe you can relate to this. And really the premise of the book was her giving a lot of attention to people that are still actively parenting kids in the home. So that isn't our reality. We're empty nesters. Our kids are adults, have their own jobs. You know, they've launched, fully launched. So we don't have the same pressure on us and our time and our energy that some people might have that are actually still actively raising their kids and then all starting to deal with aging parents. So we just thought this would be helpful. It's been helpful for me. I mean, Brian, you're getting ready to travel home in a couple of weeks. I think this series will be helpful for you to kind of set up some conversations, at least with your dad, because your mom's situation is a little different.
Yeah. And the series has four articles in it. And the first one I think is a good one to start with is titled, How Do I Honor My Aging Parents? And this is, you know, this idea of honoring your father and mother comes from the Ten Commandments. Most people would probably know that. The fifth commandment is honor your father and mother, then you will live a long, full life in the land the Lord your God is giving you. And so typically when we think of the fifth commandment, we're thinking about young kids honoring their parents, obeying their parents. We have got some parenting series at pursuegod.org based on this, that God wants children to obey their parents. Parents are kind of like stand-ins, in essence, for authority. That's really why it's it's commandment number five. The first four commandments are about relating to God. The last five commandments are about relating to society, other people, like don't murder, don't steal, don't covet. And so that fifth commandment is kind of a pivotal commandment. It's I would call it the transitional commandment between knowing how to honor God and obey God and knowing how to function in society. And so when the kids are little, it makes sense that honoring your parents is that transitional thing. You're learning how to be obedient. You're learning how to honor authority when you're little. But really the commandment still applies when we're older. It's just a little bit, maybe a little bit harder to understand how to apply because by the time we're older, we might be the ones providing for our parents. We might not need their wisdom, their insight as much as we did when we were little. And so a lot of people struggle to even know what the Bible says about this. But I think we start with the fifth commandment. The Bible says you should honor your parents, and there's not a time limit that God puts on that commandment.
Yeah, and I think part of the premise of that is what was a challenge for me, because I think it kind of happened a little quickly, I guess, for me. With my dad's health crisis, just seeing kind of him slow down and then seeing my mom and just like her, she got overwhelmed by a lot of it. And it is overwhelming, but just kind of starting to see their limitations. And I think if I'm being honest, my initial reaction to that was impatience and kind of, I don't know if I want to say annoyance, but I just felt like I was kind of like, you know, I just wanted some space to like enjoy being empty nesters. And now I'm have this burden. I wasn't expecting this burden now. And it just was a selfish attitude. And I think it was just kind of, so then everything that was coming up, whether it was, you know, can you come up and fix the leaky faucet? Or we need you to help us pull out our, you know, our furniture put away for the wintertime, for summertime, and just feeling like I'm busy. I've got stuff going on and just finding that frustrating. I just feel like God really did had to do a work in my heart of realizing like honoring my parents doesn't mean I just check a box. It means serving them the way they served and set me up in this life. Cause my parents provided a great childhood for me and opportunity. And even adults, when we were young in ministry, very generous toward us and to our ministry. And so to like stop and be reminded of that principle of honoring your father and mother. And what that means is that I don't see them as a burden, that I see them as this is my chance. Part of my act of worship is how I treat them, how I respond to their needs. My heart position towards them is one of like, it's an honor to do this, not an annoyance, not a burden that I'd rather not have.
Yeah. So I think that's really the first hurdle that children have to jump over, which is to know how to think right about what it means to honor your parents as they get older and you don't need them anymore and maybe they need you more. And so again, I encourage everybody to check out that article. But then I think the next step is, okay, how do you talk about this with your parents, especially in our situation where, you know, our parents are still pretty healthy. Your parents are definitely healthy mentally. They're fine. My parents are, you know, my mom is struggling with her memory. My dad is doing okay, but even his memory, he feels like is slipping. So I think every situation has its own challenges, but these can definitely be hard conversations when you're sitting down and almost feels like you're flipping the roles a little bit and mom and dad might not be ready for the conversation.
Yeah. So this is the plan my sister and I had is, you know, she traveled in last weekend and the plan was, you know, and I told my parents this, I said, hey, part of the strategy of this next weekend is, you know, we don't have all the family around. It's quieter. And we want to have some conversations about the future, about planning, about finances, about all that stuff. So I felt like I prepped them in advance. But if I'm looking at the article that it's saying, you know, first thing you want to do is choose the right time and atmosphere. The first time the conversation came up was actually dinner the first night my sister was in town. So we're in public. My dad has a hard time hearing. And it just kind of got off to not a great start. Because like you said, Brian, I think we should set up better as my mom, I think, feels defensive that like we're treating her as if she's infirm, as if she is not able to make sound decisions. And so we're now as her kids, like, okay, this is how it's going to be. So I do think that part of the strategy of starting these hard conversations is to make sure you're choosing the right time and the place and that you come with a heart of understanding, the sensitivity, empathy for them, that this is a hard conversation for them too. Just like it's hard for me to have to adjust my mindset that my parents had been like mainstays and supports and mentors for me, that now it's switching a little bit where I need to be more of their strength and more of their guide. But it's also hard for them to feel like, okay, now my kids are kind of making decisions or telling me this is how it's going to be. And you experienced that. I mean, your dad was pretty defensive early on when you've brought up the subject of mom might need additional care.
Yeah, he felt like, no, this is my job. I'm going to take care of her. And, you know, he can now, and he does, he does a good job now, but at some point he's not going to be able to. And this is, I think, what he's realizing is he's starting to see, yeah, you're right. This is going to happen. And I want to make sure she's taken care of. So he's all for it. And maybe that's part of the trick is you don't view it as one massive intervention. You view it as like small conversations, directed conversations. And the series at Pursue God can help you to have these sandwich generation conversations with them, just kind of one conversation at a time. We're going to dive into the weeds here in a little bit when we talk about the decision matrix and when we talk about the big red book that this author suggests putting together. So we'll get into some of those details here in a second. But Tracy, one of the other things that the article says when it comes to having this hard conversation is something that we've talked about in a lot of marriage mentoring before, which is just basic conflict resolution skills. Don't go at your parents saying you need this, or this is happening to you. You're getting forgetful. It's more about using I statements. So saying it in a approaching it in a way, in case they didn't learn this in marriage, approaching a conversation in a way that the other person can receive it.
Yeah, like one of the things that's come up for us is we really don't want our parents driving long distance to see my sister anymore. And that's a real wrestle. And I'll tell you what happened for me is we had some friends over for dinner and they're about 10 years older than us. And her father had just passed away not that long ago. And she was telling the story of how she took her dad on a trip every year because he also wasn't supposed to be driving, but he loved to just explore and to see things. And that's my parents. So what I was confronted with, and this is something that's spoken of in the article too, is instead of it like taking away all these independent things that our parents used to enjoy, like how can we replace it with something else? And so one of the things that I've decided is if I'm telling my parents, we don't want you to drive anymore to travel, my sister and I are taking them on a trip this summer, a driving trip this summer. And I'm going to try and do that every year. So instead of just saying, you can't go on trips more, I'm going to say, we would prefer you not drive because dad, your eyesight, which you admit, and his reaction time, my mom gets nervous. She sees too, that we're saying, we'll take you somewhere. So that might be something too, for you guys to consider instead of just the mindset being, we're taking the stuff away from you. It's okay for your safety. Here's how I feel. I feel nervous when you're driving in the dark because you've admitted you don't have great eyesight. You know, what if we did a ride share for you, or I'll just come pick you up and drive you home, or this idea of a traveling on a trip, we'll take you, we'll drive and do that. So I'm hopeful that my parents were excited about that. I think they received that. We'll see what that means the next time they have a plan to go on a trip that they have to drive. But I do think, you know, using I feel because statements, being empathetic toward their position, and maybe thinking of things you could add rather than just all the things you want to take away.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you have to take away that's hard for aging parents, we haven't had to do this quite yet, but for my mom, we kind of have done this a little bit in that she doesn't really drive anymore. I mean, my dad drives everywhere and she's got dementia. So like, it would not be helpful if she just felt the freedom to just get in the car and drive. Like, I think it wouldn't be safe for her, wouldn't be safe for other people on the road. So what are some, and this is just kind of one of those areas in our society that's really a little bit undefined, because I don't know that, you know, cops are out there looking when you turn a certain age. They're not, you know, I don't think anyone makes you take any tests or anything like that. So there's probably a lot of drivers out there that are dangerous to themselves and even to others. So what are some strategies for like not being the bad guy in that scenario? If you've got parents who definitely shouldn't be driving anymore, or fill in the blank with whatever other freedom that you need to take away from them living on their own or whatever, what are some ways, I don't know if the book mentioned, like how do you navigate some of those harder conversations when we're getting into like the 90s, you know, mid 90s, something like that.
Yeah. Well, the decision matrix, she gives like four things to consider as you make those kinds of decisions. But for this particular article, you know, it's helpful to bring in a third party, like whether it's the family care doctor or a pastor or somebody that your parents respect that can kind of help say, especially a doctor, like, hey, you know, your eyesight's failing, or with this health condition, it really isn't safe for you to be driving. Kind of have a third party, a professional, somebody that your parents respect that could kind of help in some of those conversations, I think is helpful, especially when it comes to issues of safety. I mean, like you said, like it wouldn't be safe for your mom. Plus, she could get lost and that would be scary and traumatic for her. Mm-hmm. So certainly are conversations and limitations that for some of you, like it's a real thing. You know, for my parents, it's getting more and more concerning, but they can still drive, but they still don't like to hear that. So there will come a day that I know they really love and respect their family, their primary care physician. So I think it might be good for like me to go in on a doctor's visit with them and just say, hey, what would you say about driving long distances and, you know, whatever else? Or when do you think mom or dad needs home care? Or when might we need to talk about assisted living?
So let's talk about that third article in the series. It's titled, How Can the Decision Matrix Help Me with My Aging Parents? What is the concept of the decision matrix when it comes to helping your aging parents to make like important decisions that might be hard for them to make, but you know, the families around them, the kids are a part of this conversation. What are the elements of the matrix?
Yeah. So this is from that book, The Sandwich Generation Survival Guide. And she talks about the four primary lenses to look through when you start to make some of these long-term decisions. It's your parents' safety, like what's the best decision for their safety, their quality of life, like hearing their heart, what they want, listening to that, the financial feasibility, which that gets really real. For a lot of families is like, what can we afford to provide? And then the sustainability, like how long would this particular decision or plan last, or how long would it be sufficient for the need? So I think that this is, you know, we started to have this conversation with my parents. Now they're not in a place where they need to be like assisted living or home care at this point, but we did talk about financially what they had in the bank and what they had access to. So, you know, they, and I appreciate this. Both of our parents have done well. They've saved their money. They've lived frugally preparing for this day, that if either of them or both of them needed long-term care, that that wouldn't come on us. And so we talked about that. We talked about like, what do we have access to funds? Have we looked at how much it would cost to be in assisted living today's numbers, and how long would the money last? Those kinds of things. But this decision matrix kind of helps to at least order thoughts in a way that you could make a sound decision, where everyone kind of understands where you came to that conclusion. In fact, she even says, like, out of scale of 1 to 10, like, where does that decision rank in safety versus another option, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So for example, I guess in your parents' example, it would be one of the decisions is, do they stay where they're at, which is about 30 minutes from a hospital, or is it time to start having conversations about them moving closer to town where they have, you know, better access to care. So this would be, I guess, safety would be the first thing in that matrix. Yeah. Whereas they might say, well, we're giving up quality of life because we like it where we are, kind of out in the mountains a little bit more beautiful, more remote. They love it out there. So you're balancing quality of life with safety in their case.
Right. And so those, you know, again, I would say that's where the conversation got really hard, because again, my parents are like, well, hold on a second. You know, we can still live on our own. We're fine. But, you know, we had to start talking about, but the sustainability pieces, what does that look like in 5 years when dad's in his mid 80s and he has some of these health situations? What if you needed regular doctor visits and you're driving down this canyon that's not safe? Like, we just had to kind of broach the subject of, this might be something we're going to need to consider down the road. And, or we also talked about, you know, if they wanted to go live closer to my sister, she has more services closer to her. So we talked about that. And like, what's the feasibility of you wanting to move 5 years from now? If it's a thought you would maybe move, why don't we talk about that now when you're still healthy enough? Because moving's stressful. So those are all kind of the matrix kind of helps to talk about it in those bigger chunks and be able to rate, like, what's the best decision and what's the 5-year plan to that? What's the 10-year plan to that? Like, does that work over, you know, is that just, that would work for 6 months? And to bring in professionals to kind of help navigate that and add in their expertise on what they think of the plan.
Yeah, one of the items in the matrix that jumps out to me is that sustainability one, because I, you know, we've both talked about, we'd be willing to take any of our parents in if the need arose. We've got room in our home for that. We've intentionally made sure that we have space in our home for something like that. But the truth is, you know, we've had a young couple living with us for a while, you know, just to bless them and help them get started in life. And it was, you know, it's a sacrifice to have someone else living with you. And this was a couple that didn't need anything from us. They just were using our space and had their own door to come in and go out as they pleased. But it still like put a burden on us. And it still was not sustainable in the long run for us. So even for this one, I feel like I've had to really wrestle with this again. You know, we've said, you guys, anyone can move in with us if you need to. But like, I've thought about, man, how sustainable would that be? We're both working. We both do ministry. We, you know, we're reporting podcasts. We're creating content for Pursue God. We're running a church. So I think the sustainability one is one that I'm going to have to really process even myself.
Yeah. And I think, you know, again, keeping in mind, because I remember this with my mom, with her mom, that she really did not want to go into an assisted living. She was living on her own. My mom's sister was able to, you know, keep an eye on her, but there came a point she started to fall more. It was a safety issue. And she really fought hard not to go into assisted living. And I've said that to my mom. I said, you know, you remember how your mom kind of fought against that, but you knew that was best for her. So I pray that moving forward, as we make decisions, your voice for sure is going to be heard. We honor you. We want you to be where you're comfortable, but trust that the heart of your kids is that we want what's best for you, just like your heart for your mom was what was best for her. Not that that's easy, but keeping that in mind too, that it's, you know, it's about overall safety. It's about hearing what they want, hearing their voice. It's about the finances. And then of course, like you were just saying, like how sustainable is that? You all have to think about, and this is what the book talked about. You have to take care of yourself too. And you need to be there for your children also. So if you're just giving all of your energy to aging parents and you can't be there for your kids, or you just totally lose sight of your own health and mental health, that's not going to be good for anyone.
So let's finish with talking then about this survival guide, creating a survival guide. Now, that again, that's the title of Dr. Hartwell's book, The Sandwich Generation Survival Guide. But really, it kind of ends on this idea of what she calls the big red binder. It's this medical emergency. It's like your plan for moving forward. And it's got a bunch of different sections. It's super practical. And again, people can refer to the article. We'll link it down below. But let's talk through that a little bit. What are the sections in that big red binder?
And this was what was most helpful to me, because like I told you guys earlier, when I was in the emergency room with my dad, I was hearing all these questions the doctors were asking and my mom was the one answering. And it just made me realize, like, I need to know this information. So that's what she talks about, that you have, you know, a binder, a document, something that you have access to, that when an emergency or crisis were to occur, you have their full legal names, you have date of birth and social security numbers. You know their medical history, the surgeries they've had, medications they're on, the dosage. You know who their primary care doctor is. You have access to the legal documents. That was something that we talked about with my parents, is establishing a trust. And, you know, they had a will, but it's old. Like, let's get this before a lawyer and make sure the will is up to date, that we put the money, their assets in a trust, you know, that's organized and signed off by a lawyer. We talked about, we need access to bank accounts, and, you know, what are your bills? What are the credit cards? You know, what are the things that if they both were to pass away, what do you do with piecing things together? Like, you should have all that information somewhere in a red binder, you know, or in a Google Doc or whatever, where you have all that information at hand. Because one of the things that she said too, is it's really important, especially in a crisis moment, like at the hospital, that you have one point of contact as the person that's kind of interfacing with doctors and nurses, that you don't have like all the siblings are having different conversations. Like, should be one person. You have your document, you have all the medical history there. You're the one that's kind of getting the information and bringing it to the sibling group. I thought that was helpful too, because I could see how, especially Bri, with you, with more siblings, that everyone wants to be a part of decision-making and being helpful, and it could just get kind of convoluted and confusing, and important information could get missed. So it's good to kind of identify one person. You know, it's having the power of attorney, having decisions about medical intervention and DNRs and living wills, like all of those things should be a part of this binder that you talk about with your parents in advance. And that part actually was pretty easy with my parents. They understand that. I think for them, that's the practical stuff. Mm-hmm. My mom didn't love the idea of having to pay a lawyer and establishing a trust, but I think she'll get there. But for her, it's more just about, you know, picturing 5 years down the road, where could you live? Like, what are we going to have to plan for? But this binder is really important. In fact, we talked about they want to be cremated. And we had the conversation of like, do you want a service? Do you want, you know, to have like a public service, or do you just want us to go spread your ashes privately as a family? And that's what they both wanted. So, you know, again, when you hit that moment, instead of having guilt of like, no, should we do this big hoopla? Like, my parents both are like, no, what we want is for the family just to go to a beautiful river, spread our ashes, say a prayer. I mean, we're not here. We're with Jesus.
Yeah. This section, this article kind of cracks me up a little bit, because the author says use high visibility tabs for this binder. So she's actually envisioning a physical red binder, which is fine.
Yes.
That's okay. But what I envision is a Google Doc. I love that Google Docs now has tabs. So you can create literally a tab for each one of these different sections. Now, that's not to say you can't print it out and put it in a binder. That's fine. But I would imagine, like the situation you brought up when your dad was at a hospital in Colorado, like, we wouldn't have been able to have someone go into one of our homes and get the binder. So would have been nice to just pull it up on the phone, share it with the doctor, whatever you need to do. So we can certainly modernize this process, but there's five tabs, at least five sections here that are just real quick. The quick look profile, it's a one-page summary with full legal names, dates of birth, social security numbers, a list of all current diagnoses and allergies, which, by the way, is a good reason to make sure that this is secure, whatever this is. If you are going to use a Google Doc, make sure that it's everyone that's shared on it has good passwords and things like that, because you don't want this kind of thing to be hacked. Medical contacts and history is a second section, directory of all the primary doctors and specialists, along with a chronological log of recent hospitalizations or surgeries. That would be super helpful. Again, your mom probably knew that stuff, but if your mom wasn't there, we'd have been like, I don't know. I don't remember his medications and last time he was in the hospital, those sorts of things. Medication master list, section number 3. Legal and insurance section, number 4. Copies of Medicare, Medicaid cards, private insurance policies, long-term care insurance details, and most importantly, power of attorney documents. So that might be something you need to work out as a family as well. Make sure you know who has power of attorney should something happen.
And the executor of the will, who's the executor.
Mm-hmm. And then the last section of this isn't the last one, but the fifth one here in this overview is the financial map, a list of bank accounts, recurring bills, pension, retirement fund, contact information, that kind of stuff. Now, you don't need all the statements necessarily, but you need a map of where the assets are located. And this is actually something that my dad already did with me last year. He wrote all this out, sat down with me, said, hey, I want to make sure you know this. Here's my passwords. Here's where my accounts, here's where my savings lives. Here's all this information. So my dad's already kind of ahead of the game on this in terms of the financial stuff, but definitely not the medication stuff. You know, my dad's the only one who really knows the medications my mom takes. So this is really helpful to make sure that we have that so that if something were to happen to him, like we can still continue to take care of her he's been doing.
Well, especially because of your mom's situation, she won't know. In fact, I think if I remember correctly, your dad just makes sure she takes the pills, but doesn't really know what she's taking. She doesn't know what they are or why.
Yeah. Well, the crazy thing is my mom does have one of the things that still works in her memory is like medication names. It's crazy how she could just, she could just say all these really complicated medical names. She wasn't even a doctor or nurse, but it seems like she should have been because she gets that stuff. So she maybe remembers what that is, but she might not remember when she's supposed to take it, how long, how to get it, the prescription fulfilled and that kind of stuff. So it's just a lot of little details that if you wait till one of your parents passes away, I think you could maybe get through this stuff, but boy, it would be a lot harder.
Yeah. And I think that's why I hope that you guys find this series helpful. I think it does prompt some good conversation, thinking things through, just being mindful of all of the dynamics that are around it. But my hope is that, it gives you some direction, like a roadmap perhaps to use. And really for our parents, for me at the end of the day, I think my heart needed to change toward the privilege it is to take care of my parents. And so my heart towards then all of these decisions is coming to them, giving them dignity and honor and respect, but also earning trust. Like, these are some conversations we need to have. And I want to earn your trust that we're going to make these decisions with your best interest in mind, not just your kind of a burden that I'm just trying to take the easy road or something.
So the series is called Sandwich Generation. You can find it in our faith and our marriage and family category at pursuegod.org. We'll put a link to the series in the show notes below. It's got 4 great articles connected to it. I'm excited to go through this. I'm going to share this link, this podcast and this link with my siblings as we're getting ready to have these important conversations. We're going to be creating a big red binder for our parents. And so for all of our listeners, I hope you'll do the same thing. It's a great way to honor your parents.
Thanks for listening. If you would like to give to help support our ministry, please visit pursuegod.org/donate. Find more resources to talk about these topics with your small group, family, or mentor on pursuegod.org.